Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey Bia's research grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Well, today I am on the road. I am up at the Hawk Watch in Upper Montclair, and you might hear some of the wind going by or a plane going by. And I am here today on the ridgetop with scientist Chris Payne. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, Joey. I'm glad to be here. It's a beautiful day out here, and hopefully we'll have some hawks come past while we're doing this.
Well, you know, the neat thing, Chris, and you know this, hey, this is an active site, and you're the active scientist. So, hey, we've been already here before we started to record, and, you know, you're looking at a couple warblers and things, and anything else early this morning?
Yeah, we already had a juvenile northern harrier come past, which is a good bird for this site. We don't have a lot. So it's good to see some early action today.
And you know this, and you could share with our audience, is every day the same up here at the site?
Oh no, it's very different from day to day, and it's largely winds dependent. So at this site, when we get west winds, it often blows birds that are migrating through the central part of the states and into Pennsylvania. It blows them towards us. And north wind is also very good because it gives the birds a tailwind and can create much better migratory days, whereas the south or east winds can bring a slow day up here.
Well, you know, and I'll say it this way, so people there that are listening understand, winds are named from the direction they come from. So that's important to understand.
Yes,
when
so
they
the
hear
north wind is coming from the north, yeah, and giving the birds a tailwind.
Yeah, so again, it sounds funny, but planes, when they're up in the sky and going east to west, are looking for, you know, the same thing. And so winds become important up there for the birds. So up here, what was your best day that you've had so far, and what have you been seeing?
We had a day in late September where we had just under 1,500 raptors come through, most of which were broad-winged hawks, which are known for migrating in large number. 1,300 of the 1,500 were broadwings. And we also had a lot of falcons and other birds that day. And we had a strong northwest wind and good cloud cover, and all of the conditions were right for an excellent day. And we got that.
You know, it's something, and you know this as a scientist, you're out there and you're waiting, but on those days, it's like some of the most exciting days of your life, just really just seeing what you're seeing out there.
Oh yeah, it was really rewarding. I was waiting for those broadwings to come for a long time. The conditions seemed right for 3 days prior to that, but none were coming through. And then when they finally did, it really made it pay off.
That is cool. So,
this show was brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com.
Chris, let's talk about, like, can you describe to the audience, and I'll just say we'll define, like, what's migration?
So migration, in terms of birds, are when they're headed, this time of year, they're headed south for the winter. And primarily what is going on is the raptors, which are what we're counting up here, are following the food source. So a lot of what these birds eat, in some cases for the smaller birds, are insects such as dragonflies or even some butterflies. They're not going to be around in the winter, so these birds need to go south where they can find a steady diet and continue to thrive. And some have to go much farther than others to do that. So there are some species that will winter in the southern United States, or even up here if they can find enough food in the winter time. But that food is a resource that is much more abundant in the Amazon basin, for example, in the winter. So that is where a lot of these birds are headed.
It's pretty amazing when you think about, okay, we need food and we migrate to the ShopRite. They need food and they migrate thousands of miles. And knowing that in the springtime, they got to turn around and come back.
Yeah, they'll come back in the spring because the opposite is sort of in effect there. They're overcrowded in the winter. And so they'll want to move back north where the insects will be back, or the birds or whatever their food source may be. So they'll want to move and spread out in the spring or in the summer when they're having their babies, so that they can supply food without much competition.
So I see you picking up the binos. What are you onto right now?
I had a distant bird flying past, but it was just a blue jay this time.
You said it's funny. It's just a blue jay, but hey, blue jays are blue jays, man. They are beautiful birds.
Oh, they really are.
You know, I sometimes think, again, I'll call them the backyard birders, of which, hey, I am, you know, I'm a bird feeders and all this. There are birds we shouldn't take for granted, and you know, those are one of them. And when you get that really good look at a blue jay, especially after it's just snowed and they're down, because they're ground feeders and they're feeding on the ground, and you're looking at them, you know, some of my feeders are like 10 feet from my window, and you're just checking it out, and like, there's a great beauty to, I guess, to every bird that I see. But again, you and I are a little biased into what we see.
Yeah, it can be great whenever you see a blue jay and a cardinal together with a snowy backdrop. Even though they're common birds, it's one of the most magnificent sights you can see.
Yeah. Now, question for you is, so what's your primary job up here at the Hawk Watch?
So I'm recording the raptor migration. The raptors are your birds of prey, characterized by their sharp, down-curved beak that they use to eat the prey and the talons that they use to catch that prey. And I record all of the species that I see headed south. So there are local birds here, mostly red-tailed hawks that do not go on my count, but all of the migratory ones are counted. And that is to record their population over time. There are counts similar to this all over the country. And over the years, when you do the count in the same time frame, year after year, you can really see how the populations are growing or declining over time. So it's a good way to keep tabs on it. And actually, the recording the raptor populations is a good way to determine the overall health of your ecosystem as a whole, because the raptors are the top of the food chain. So when they're thriving, when they had a lot of young in a given year, that means there was plenty of food, which means that the rest of the ecosystem is doing well, as in addition to the raptors.
So top to bottom, you know that, again, if they're doing well, well then obviously there's a great population. I'm just gonna say in the rodent population. So the rodent population, because they had, you know, available food sources for all of it. Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And let's just talk, you spoke about your greatest day up here as far as numbers. What was your coolest bird you saw up here at the Hawk Watch this fall?
The coolest bird this fall?
I know that's always tough for a birder, because like,
yeah,
every bird is a cool bird.
The best one in terms of rarity was a Midwestern field species called a Dick Sissle. They typically breed in the Midwest, but this year there was an influx of them in New Jersey because they had a food shortage out there. So there were several breeding in the state, and we had one fly past. That was the best bird. The favorite bird that I've probably seen was actually just yesterday. An adult bald eagle flew through the quarry below eye level with stunning light in the afternoon, and it was just a spectacular view of one of the most famous birds.
Yeah, you know, hey, our nation's symbol, and that's a cool thing. And I was chatting with you the other day after I had launched a podcast and recorded one in the studio. I loaded the kayak up, and I told you I went out, 3,000 acres of water, just me, and there's an immature bald eagle like right above me fishing for like 10 minutes. And, you know, for me, it's like, you know, am I there to kayak? Am I there a bird? Well, I thought I was kayaking, but for those 10 minutes, it's just like, you know, the most majestic thing you could see is just really cool.
Yeah, you can never get tired of looking at bald eagles, that's for sure.
Nah, absolutely. Now, and I know that we were chatting off camera about this one, or off. So here's my question to you. What was your best day ever during migration? And I know that's also tough for a birder.
Yeah, that's tough, but for me, it would probably have to be last fall. I was in the Florida Keys on a job, and down there they have a spectacular number of peregrine falcons that migrate through. And we had a day that we saw 350 of them in the same day, in addition to a bunch of southern species I don't often get to see, including swallow-tailed kites, which are incredible if you look them up.
Yeah,
they're really incredible bird, and short-tailed hawks, and just a bunch of things I don't get to see. And it was like the big day we had here, but down there with different species, and it was just a sight to behold.
And I understand that you're a peregrine-aholic. You just love them?
Yeah, they're my favorite raptor. They're just so incredible in the air, the way that they fly. They're powerful, and they're the world's fastest animal. And to see one in a full dive is unlike anything else, but it's like the bald eagle. I'll never get tired of looking at peregrines.
And I used to think that I was the world's fastest animal until they recorded the peregrine falcon, and that was part of it. So, like, I guess I must be second at this point in my life. But, hey, I don't mind.
I think they have you beat just by a little bit.
A little bit on that one. And it's funny that we've been filming a documentary, and I can't tell the location of it because it wasn't far from this hawk watch, but there's a nesting pair of peregrines right there. So we're filming, and we're heading through. We're actually on a pontoon boat. And we're heading through, and we're looking at a nest, and we're looking at all. And they were just fledglings at this point, where they're just ready to roll and get out of that nest. It was just, like, so cool to see. So not far from here, there is a nesting pair. Maybe later on, Chris, I'll share that with you, but not on camera or on recording here. So, Chris, I know that you've been on some other research projects, because this is what you do for a living. So tell me about some of your ones, some of the projects you've been on.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of work with warblers, the small songbirds, over the years. Back home in western Pennsylvania, I did work with cerulean warblers, which are endangered in the state and live in a very specific habitat. So I did surveys for them where I would go walk transects along ridgetops listening for their song. And when I found the song, I would try to centralize their territory and record the bird's behavior. I've also done work with golden-winged warblers here in New Jersey, which are also endangered. There are approximately 25 to 30 breeding pairs in the entire state. So we were trying to establish where their population is centered and how they're doing as a species in the state. As I mentioned earlier, last fall I did another hawk watch similar to this in the Florida Keys, which was alike but very different. November days up here will not be anything like I was used to down there, where our cold front in October was 75 degree weather. And I also did a little bit of work banding cerulean warblers here in New Jersey.
Well, you know what, and it's funny that, and I know that you're talking about weather, and weather is depending upon, you know, what forces migration. Well, this year's been a crazy year because we've had unseasonably warm, not a lot of rain, except for when hurricanes were pushing through. Or again, some of the migratory paths are going to be affected when a hurricane is pushing north of here as well. So you have any questions or comments you can make, rather, about the weather going on?
The hurricanes have not really affected me at this site much. I was expecting to get southeast winds, which would have been very bad for this site, especially when the hurricanes were just off the coast, but that didn't really seem to be the case. There were a lot of still days, actually, where there was not much wind. I don't know if they were creating a low pressure system or what was going on, but one thing that often does happen with hurricanes when they work their way up the coast is that birds get trapped in the eye of the hurricane and end up far out of their territory, and that has happened to an extent this year with some southern birds getting blown north, including some roseate spoonbills, which are a pink bird somewhat reminiscent of a flamingo, but their bill is shaped like a spoon, as the name would suggest, they're currently in southern New Jersey, far out of their typical range of Florida.
So the weather really then has had an effect on them, and again, and other birds. But that is one of them. And, you know, it's funny. And again, we're up here and we're recording early in the morning when, you know, the birding just sort of starts to pick up. But we're in an unseasonable, it's going to be up in the 80s again today here, which is not a seasonable day for, you know, this part of the country. So hopefully the birding picks up, you know, and that's a piece of it. So let me ask you a question. Growing up, because here you are, you're a biologist, so you're out in the field, you love doing field research. Growing up, like, what led you to this career?
I was immersed in birding from birth, basically. Both of my parents were bird watchers, and it's just something that I've always been doing. I've always been outdoors and experiencing it. But when I really got into it, I was probably about 10 years old, and before that I'd enjoyed looking at birds here and there. But one year, my dad told me that he would give me a quarter for every bird species I could record for the entire calendar year. And that got me outdoors every single day, just trying to find that extra bird for my list. And ever since then, I've just been hooked.
And you know, it's funny, Dad, the money wasn't the objective with him. It was to get you out there.
Exactly.
And you know this, getting hooked on a great outdoor activity, because to me, it's like, I just want to be outdoors every single day. And you and I, the last time I was up at the Hawk Watch, when I had met you, you and I were talking about fishing, and fishing is our, you know, sort of our outlet to get out there. But here you are fishing, and then all of a sudden you see a bird, and it could just be an owl, and all of a sudden, like, fishing has, it's, there's no bearing. Like, you're not there to fish anymore. You're there for that owl or whatever it is.
Exactly. When you're outdoors, it's, no matter what you're doing, it can be a good day. So if you're fishing and not catching fish, you can just enjoy the birds. If you're birding and you see a deer or a mammal of some sort, it can, just being outside is where the enjoyment really comes from, and just experiencing what nature has to offer.
And it's funny that you actually said what nature has to offer, and that's what I always talk about. Joey B. Outdoors is just that, is like, you know, getting people either in the outdoors or teaching people, you know, via our podcasts or the Joey B. TV site, is getting people to understand a little bit more about it and educating. And now with the education side, so two things, and how are we getting our youth or novice adults into birding? Like, what should we be doing to get them to learn more or get into it?
Well, I think it is important to get kids started at a young age. One thing that we could do would be to introduce birding clubs in schools, because when you're young, you're very impressionable. So if you see something, like when I was a kid, just getting hooked is the important part. So if you can get them in early, it's something that will last their entire lives. But it's never too late to get into birding. I have people up here all the time, up here at the Hawk Watch, that say that they've never been here before. And if I can show them a bald eagle fly past, no matter how old they are, that's something that can just really connect them to birds and nature in general.
Well, you know, we were speaking about that and social media, because it's funny, but everywhere you go, social media is part of it. And that is a great way to get people involved, and just letting them know that there's Hawk Watches around, or there's a bird club that's going to go on a bird hike, because all across the country, there are bird clubs everywhere. And you know, most of their hikes are free because they're just meeting at a trail somewhere. And yeah, sometimes people are afraid that they might not know enough, or just get out there with those folks, because as you and I were chatting before, birders are some of the most knowledgeable people about nature and birds, obviously, and they love to share more than any other group, and I think that's really neat.
Yeah, it's a very welcoming community, and I would strongly encourage anybody to try to get to a local Hawk Watch, for instance. There are Hawk Watches all across the country, so there's probably one near you. And if you go, the people there will definitely be willing to share what they're seeing, and probably even let you use their optics and see what's going on. And you were talking about social media. There's a lot of photographers at Hawk Watches especially that can get incredible pictures of some of these birds, and they share that on social media. So I would encourage people to look for that as well, because sometimes you see these pictures and it's a bird that you may not even know that exists, that lives right in your area or migrates past your area. And that's something that you could get out and see, if you know that it's there.
Well, actually, you just said that, and my saying is eyes to the sky. And if we just can get people in their backyards to be looking up, because during migration, I mean, hey, they're sailing over your head, and if you're not looking up, you're not seeing.
Yeah, in some cases, they are very high, because the higher they get, the less energy they have to expend. But you never know when one might come right past you.
Right, you said the bald eagle zipped right through right here.
Below eye level, yeah.
That in itself is pretty neat. Now, I know this is a tough question for the outdoorsman, for the scientist. What is your favorite, or where is your favorite place on earth to bird?
To bird? That is a tough one. I've been fortunate enough to do a lot of traveling in my life so far, and I've been to a lot of incredible places. But for birding specifically, I would have to say Costa Rica. Specifically in the mountains of Costa Rica, I went to a resort called Savegre, which is like volcanic mountains, and they just have all sorts of incredible birds. My favorite being a bird called a resplendent quetzal, which is a large green bird with a red breast like a robin, but a tail that extends 3 feet beyond its body. We got to see several of those, and it was incredible.
I'm going to have to go see social media. I'm going to have to just go on.
Cevegre.
I'm going to have to. That sounds like a cool experience. And again, people always call them life birds, you know, and that was probably like the life bird for you there, adding to that list.
Yeah, that was, I got many life birds, so new birds for my life list there, but that was the one that really stands, that sticks out above all the others.
Now, a question for you, because it's an awesome day. I'm sure the birding will pick up. And how much longer will you be at this site?
So this count will go through the end of November. November 30th is the last day. And the composition of the raptors will change throughout the season. The rest of October can be very productive for big numbers of sharp-shinned hawks, Cooper's hawks, falcons, including the peregrine falcons. And that will sort of taper off in November, but later in the season there can be good northern species such as golden eagles, northern goshawks, rough-legged hawks, and other things. So the overall numbers will be lower, but there will be very good species to be seen.
So I'd like to end this show by thanking you for sharing your knowledge with us and your love and your passion. And hopefully someone out there is listening, and hopefully someone out there is saying, I got to get my kid into this. And, you know, if that's what today's show is all about, then we have a successful show. So I want to thank you for everything you've said today.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Until next time, enjoy life's adventures.
You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.